Here we are. Good afternoon and welcome to the virtual space that today is the Minnesota Court of Appeals. The next matter on for oral argument is Doornbos versus Yetke. And counsel, I'll just remind you in case you're unaware and mainly for the record, that the Court of Appeals is declining to hold oral argument live at the Judicial Center in St. Paul or the other places around the state where we typically will hold oral argument in light of the ongoing pandemic, out of concern for the public, the parties, the attorneys, and court staff. And we're hosting this oral argument by WebEx, with our apologies for the technology. As you've probably experienced over the last several weeks, you know, there may be glitches from time to time. Just alert us during your oral argument if it appears you're having difficulty hearing your opponent's argument or hearing questions from the court, and we'll try to pause and get the technology up to speed. Our rules remain the same. Each side will have 15 minutes to present your oral argument with an additional 5 minutes to appellant's counsel if you choose to use it for rebuttal. Please state your name as you commence each leg of your argument because we do keep track of the proceedings in our audio recording, which will be made available to the public on our website in due course after the argument. Counsel, with that, whenever you're ready to proceed, appellant's counsel, you have the floor.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is John Westrick. I represent the appellant, Catherine Doornbos. Ms. Doornbos has brought an action below claiming an equal 50% ownership interest, member interest in Thor Electric LLC as a result of her being a co-organizer with the respondent. The corporate documents did not name governors, so under the law at the time, the organizers were the governments. Governors, there has to be a member for an LLC. The corporate documents identified her again as an organizer, and that made her a member because she did have government's rights, because as a governor, she was a governor because she was an organizer. There's a presumption that the LLC is valid, and it was filed in May of 2009. It will be very difficult to go back and undo this. The important point here that Ms. Doornbos wants me to make is that she and the respondent are in the same boat. They both were just named. There were no other documents. And so if respondent is a member and a governor, she must be as well.
Counsel, I want to stop you there. I certainly noted that argument in your brief that you, your client and the defendant, respondent on appeal, are in the same boat. But the only issue in front of us is whether your complaint states a claim on behalf of Ms. Doornbos, right?
Yes.
And it seems to me, if I'm following your line of argumentation, that you are acknowledging that for Ms. Doornbos to pursue either count two or count three, she has to allege facts showing that she's a member of the LLC.
Yes.
Do I understand that right for both count two and count three?
In the sense, Your Honor, that if she's not a member, she can't bring a claim for distributions. And since the count three is for distributions, if she's not a member, she doesn't get the claim for distributions. Yes.
All right. And the reason I wanted to clarify that is it seems to me that, you know, the other point that you're beginning on, and I know you have arguments in your favor, have to do with which chapter we apply to determine whether Ms. Doornbos is a member. Do we look at 322C or do we look at 322B? I think I have that right. Why don't you give me your explanation of why you think it is, I believe, 322B. And if it's not 322B, so if we disagree with you on that legal point, does your client lose?
Well, I believe it's 322B because it has to be. Because at the time that the LLC was formed, there was no 322C. And so, for instance, if one looks at did a contract, let's just use the simplest argument, did a contract get formed in 2009 for some kind of... If the law allowed the contract to be formed, then the contract was formed. If the law later changed and says you can't make such a contract, then the contract would, you know, be terminated as that time. But the easiest answer is if the legislature never passed a 322C, we wouldn't be having this argument. I note that in past cases, particularly the Lunds trust dispute, this court went ahead and applied 322B, even though when everything happened, 322C had supplanted it. And so, you know.
So, counsel, I want to back up for a second, though, as I read the Lund case, and I might be wrong. That was a case where, yes, you're right. The like this one, the events, relevant events, had happened in the time frame of 322B, but the lawsuit was also filed before 322C was applicable. So, does that matter?
I don't think so, because I believe that when someone becomes a member or a corporate shareholder, the law at the time of the law that applies at the time that the entity was formed has to control, because we don't know whether or not the law later would be. Certainly the duties to the parties was going to change as of, I think it was January 2018. Certainly, and 322C supplanted it. Certainly, then the law would change as to what their relationship is and the duties that they owed them. But whether or not the company itself was formed and what her status was, I think has to be controlled by 322B. And as another analogy, when you look as to whether parties have contracted a marriage, you look at the law at the time and the place of the marriage. You don't look at what happens thereafter. And so, just as an example, since we now have marriage equality, if someone said, I entered into a same-sex marriage in 1978, you would say, no, in 1978, that marriage wasn't valid. And then now you'd say, you could enter into one now because it has been determined that marriage equality is the law, and so you do this. But I don't think you go back and say, oh, and so you shall, and everything is fixed. I just don't think you can erase the way the things were at the time and then just say, well, that doesn't matter anymore. And
so, counsel, when the legislature adopted 322C, they did adopt an applicability provision. I mean, there are a series of, and I just noticed you're not referring to it. Do you think that helps your argument, or does it hurt your argument?
No, I don't think it matters, because the applicability says as of such and such date, it applies to all of the LLCs. I believe it's January 1st, 2018 was the date that, and the LLCs could have chosen to have, well, they could have elected to have had it apply to them beforehand. So to me, because it does, but just that provision means they understand 322B was going to have some applicability. It's just that now the duties between the parties is controlled by 322C, but at the time the LLC was formed, I believe 322B controls.
So is it your argument that she was already a member prior to January 1, 2018? So we should just presume that that's the 322C provisions treat her as a member? I mean, is that your strain of argument?
Well, that is in somewhat my argument, is that as of May of 2009, she was a member. And so because she was a member when 322C came into place, then that would mean that the relationship between the parties would now be controlled by 322C. But that when 322B was applicable, that's what rendered her to be a member. Yes. By the way, is there somewhere I'm supposed to be looking at my time? Usually I have that clock right in front of me.
There should be, if you'll notice, there's a clock on one of the screens.
Oh, there it is. Thank you. My eyes aren't that good. I mean, that is our argument, and that's Ms. Dornbusch's argument, that she was a member. Now, the other part that we talk about is there's this statute of limitations issue that I want to address, and I don't think should have been addressed on a Rule 12 motion. I believe that certainly we have alleged sufficient facts to, at least at this part of the proceeding, demonstrate there was a confidential relationship. Certainly, if they were members in an in an LLC, there is a fiduciary relationship between the parties apart from their long-term relationship. Courts have held that a confidential relationship will toll the statute of limitations. And there may be an issue is this really a statute of limitations or a latches argument? And that, of course, will rely on, would require facts. But I also want to point out that even if the statute of limitations is applying, Ms. Dornbus continually alleges that there were distributions made that should have been made to her, and certainly those distributions occurred within the 2 years, and as a result, the statute might bar some of her claims, but not the others. And lastly, Ms. Dornbus is not asserting a derivative claim. She's asserting a claim that distributions that belong to her were instead distributed to Mr. Yadke, and that's the basis of her claim. Not that the corporation made payments, the LLC made payments it shouldn't and should recapture those, but that she was entitled to those because members have to be treated equally. And so it is not a derivative claim. And I do want to direct the court to the Wortham case that I cited in my reply brief. Because in the Wortham case, there were problems with completing the corporate structure and nobody was really named any kind of a shareholders and no one knew what to do. And this court ruled that notwithstanding the paperwork not being right, the promises were made, the parties took the initial steps to make the company, and everybody's going to be treated as they were intended to be, even though the paperwork never caught up. And so we believe that that is an excellent analogy to be applied with us, to be applied to this case.
So, counsel, I'd like to direct you back to the membership issue, if I could. Yeah. I'm well aware that we're going to construe and interpret the allegations in your complaint very generously. I mean, that's clearly required under a Rule 12, our review of a Rule 12 decision. So I want to be very clear on where it is that you have included allegations that are sufficient to support your claim that Ms. Dornbus is a member. I know that it appeared to me that the district court was concerned about paragraph 10 in your complaint, and you maybe have that in front of you, because the district court said that, you know, there you very clearly allege the facts, which you have already summarized, that no members were ever designated by the LLC. And so, but then you go on to say that the defendant held the plaintiff out to be an owner slash member. So I assume that's the allegation you're relying on, right? That it's the holding out?
No, Your Honor. It's part of the holding out, but it's also this. And I know it seems roundabout, but under the law, at the time, a member was defined as someone who had governance rights, that the books and records showed has governance rights. And because when the company was formed, organized, there was no board of governors named, that then means the organizers are the board of governors. And as a member of the board and governors, Ms. Dornbus then has governance rights, which means according to the definition in subdivision 30, she is a member because she has governance rights. So what we start is, again, this is 322B.833. No named governors, organizers are the governors. And 322B.11 says there has to be members. So the fact that you don't name a member doesn't necessarily mean there aren't members, because there has to be a member. And so then there's also a presumption that, and that's in 322B.18, that the LLC is valid. And so then if you look at the definition in 322B.03 subdivision 30, you'll see that because the documents identify her as an organizer, that makes her a member because she has governance rights, because she's a governor as an organizer.
So, counsel, I did see those provisions, and you've got them nicely quoted in your brief. But it seems to me that it is more than governance rights, it includes membership rights, and some suggestion that the organization has books or records that reflect it. And that's where I don't see that allegation in your complaint. So am I missing it?
Well, by alleging that they were the organizers, the organization documents are books and records of the limited liability company. And so the books and records do show that, because it shows her to be an organizer. And the document also shows there's no governance rights and there's no members named. But that doesn't, you don't have to name a member to be a member. It's just that certain things, just like if you don't name governors, then the organizers are the governors. And the definition provided in subdivision 30, 03 subdivision 30, says a member is someone with governance rights as shown by the books and records of the company. And the organizational document is a record of the company. So far as we knew and alleged, Your Honor, there were no other books and records at all. This is it.
So, counsel, are you telling me that all governors then, in the, you know, assuming members aren't otherwise designated, that all governors have membership interests? Is that right? Is that the presumption?
I'm out of time. May I answer the question?
You may answer.
Thank you. They would, absent some other document saying that they're not. Organizer is a governor, and a governor has governance rights. And because in this instance, the corporate books and records do not indicate anything to the contrary, therefore, she is a member. Did I answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you. You will have 5 minutes of additional time if you'd like to use it for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent.
Good afternoon. If it pleases the court, I am Carol Moss. I am the attorney for defendant Kyle Yadke. And we are before this court to respectfully request that it affirm the district court's decision and dismiss count 2 and 3 of plaintiff's amended complaint, which I describe as the business claim. And we have three independent reasons as to why these claims should be dismissed. And the district court only needed to look at the first one, but I would like to touch on all three today. Just as Your Honor had noted, the biggest issue that is most dispositive of this case is which version of the statute applies. Which statute, 322B, as the plaintiff is attempting to argue, or 322C, which was the statute in place at the time this lawsuit was initiated. And I think it's very illustrative why the plaintiff wants 322B to apply, because there is no legal support for her under the current statute. 322B was repealed fully, first on a sliding basis, at rolling basis, and then in full by January 1st, 2018. And this case was started in May in 2019. The court looks to what was in place at the time of the lawsuit, not what was in place when the company was incorporated. Would we go back to 1902 and look at the statute back then? Anytime 3M
is Moss, if I could interrupt just for a minute. So if Mr. Westrick is right, and both clients were members, well, 322B, just assume that that's right, under 322B, then 322C comes along, there's no change in documents or signed agreements. Are you saying that your client could suddenly strip Ms. Dornbos of any right to pay? I mean, let's say they'd been paying all along. I mean, does it change her rights somehow or another? Or how does this change in the statute work if there's no written agreement or LLC documents designating the members?
Thank you, Your Honor, for your question, and I appreciate it. And before I address it, I would just like to take a step back and remind the court that we are looking at the allegations in the amended complaint and that there was no members ever initiated or designated. And so it's not a question of whether we are stripping the plaintiff of any rights. She never had any rights to begin with because she was never a member. An organizer does not create membership. And the statutes are pretty clear on that. And there's a reason why the legislature determined that it was repealing 322B and placing 322C into place. It's because there is not this gray area. And plaintiffs, even if we do apply 322B, Your Honor, the plaintiff does not allege enough facts for her to even become a member under that circumstance. There's no case law cited by the plaintiff that even if she was held out to be an owner, that would create legal rights for her under 322B. And so there is an issue as to which applies, but we believe that 322C applies, and we believe that she has never had a membership at any point, whereas all of the claims start to fall away. So, Your Honor, I'd like to just move on very briefly about why 322C does not provide the basis for these claims. 322C.0201 states that organizers are not members. Organizers are not precluded from being members, but that does not create an automatic membership. And I also like to reiterate the statute 322C.0401, in which there needs to be some sort of voluntary undertaking of a membership. And there's no agreement. There was no understanding. There was no belief that she was a member. And so we believe that that alone causes these claims to fail.
So, counsel, as I read 322C, there is a provision that recognizes membership based on consent of the members. Mm-hmm. Isn't that right? And we do have an allegation here that your client, and I'm sorry if I pronounce his name wrong, is it Yetke? Mr. Yetke.
Yes.
That he held out Ms. Dornbus as a member and owner. So is that, I'm remembering again that how broadly we are going to interpret and generously we're going to interpret allegations and complaints, is that enough under 322C to establish a claim?
We believe no, Your Honor. And even when we read those allegations broadly and we review them in favor of the non-moving party, that doesn't mean that we get to add facts in there. And the plaintiff has not pled any reason in her original complaint or in her amended complaint as to a voluntary undertaking, a voluntary understanding, or anything as to her state of mind. So we do not believe that there was enough allegations to even looking at the amended complaint broadly, that would find that she is a member and she has standing to bring these causes of action. Again, just moving on very briefly, and the district court found that Minnesota Statute 322C.0901, which forms the basis of plaintiff's count 2, does not provide an independent cause of action, but rather it is merely states that members may have direct actions against each other. There has to be membership status even before 322C.0901 comes into play. And that direct action is one that would, for example, be involving an operating agreement. Taking that logic or taking that position one step further into the third count, the second business claim, the breach of fiduciary duty, there is no breach, there's no duty if there's no membership. And the district court found that these reasons were sufficient to find that that plaintiff's business claims fail as a matter of law. And the district court did note specifically in this order that it did not find that 322B applied, but rather 322C. The Lund case, just as Your Honor noted, involved a case that started when 322B was applicable, and the statute came into play midstream, and the court found that they looked at the statute at the time the lawsuit was initiated. The court didn't even look at our second two reasons of why these claims fail as a matter of law, but I'd like to just touch on them. The breach of fiduciary duty, which is count three, is in essence a creative pled derivative claim. This claim belongs to Thor Electric and does not belong to the plaintiff. A direct claim belongs to a membership, whereas a derivative claim belongs to the corporation. And the courts have been very specific that they don't look, that it's not the theory that the plaintiff alleges, but rather what is the injury that is being alleged as part of that claim. And in this case, the plaintiff is arguing that the assets of the corporations were not distributed properly. It is a classic misappropriation of assets claim. And that claim, with that injury, belongs directly to Thor Electric. The plaintiff could have brought this claim on behalf of Thor Electric, but she was required to first to undertake the steps that are required in Minnesota Rule of Civil Procedure 23.09, which requires what pre-litigation steps are needed in order for a derivative claim to be brought by a member. And those actions include what was done prior to pre-litigation to get the desired result. Those actions need to be described with particularity, and in this case, were not done so. So given that this breach of fiduciary duty is a derivative one just repackaged as a direct claim, does not cause the claim to survive, but rather the plaintiff does not have the ability to bring it, and count three should be dismissed. And very last, Your Honor, I'd like to just touch on the statute of limitations. And this is a case that was brought 10 years after the alleged harm had occurred. As Mr. Westrick described in detail, the organization of the company should have been created, or in his view, created the membership in Thor Electric. That happened back in May of 2009, and this lawsuit was not brought until 10 years later in May of 2019. That statute of limitations.
Ms. Moss, how do you distinguish this from the cases that are recognized in the state of Minnesota where there's an ongoing stream of payments, like wage payments? And you just say, okay, can't go all the way back to 2009, but I can go back 6 years or 2 years or whatever the right statute is from when I brought the claim. I mean, they were living together. They bought a house together. Presumably they were sharing expenses. So it's no big deal that he wasn't writing checks out to her. They, based on the complaint, they were, you know, buying and selling each other's vehicles. So how do you respond to that? And I didn't see any cases right on point, because it seems to be a very fact specific kind of analysis.
Sure, Your Honor. And I believe our position is supported by Park Nicollet Clinic versus Hammond, 808 Northwest 2nd Edition 828, in which there is that type of example that Your Honor provided, where there was a situation in which the plaintiff had received reduced paychecks due to a wrong, and those reduced paychecks spanned multiple years. But those paychecks, those damages, stemmed from an action taken prior to the 6 years, and it's just a continuation of the damages. In Minnesota, we, once there are some damages, enough to survive a motion to dismiss, the 6 year statute of limitation applies. And even the cases that are cited by the plaintiff does not support what Your Honor is asking. In the Hahn case, H-O-N-N, that involved payments from a promissory note. And the court said that every time there was a missing payment, that was a new breach and a new cause of action. Well, that makes sense because that harm took place at that time. If we were to buy, if we were to take out a 30-year mortgage, it doesn't make sense that if we breach that promissory note on year 10, that the bank couldn't bring a breach of contract claim because the contract was more than 10 years old. So that ruling makes sense. But in this situation, the alleged wrong, the failure to make a member back in 2019, started that single cause of action, started the damages. And once there are some damages, that cause of action begins to accrue. And similarly, as in the other case that the plaintiff cites, the Tooms case, T-O-O-M-S, that also does not support the plaintiff's position. That is a trust, there was an issue with a final accounting on a trust. And in that case, the court looked into the fraudulent, the failure to provide information, to hide information, fraud in the failure to advise the plaintiff of her potential rights. And none of those actions are alleged here. And if Your Honor, if I just may finish your question, I see that my time is up. This case is involving the alleged harm that took place in 2009. There was no allegation that Mr. Westrick hid anything, committed fraud, did any kind of concealing, just because she didn't feel the need to start the lawsuit back more than 10 years later does not mean that lawsuit or that these claims survive. And for those reasons, Your Honor, those three independent reasons, we believe that the district court's decision should be affirmed, and we request that this court do so. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Any rebuttal?
If I may, please. Your Honors, first of all, my client is not suing because she wasn't made a member in 2009. She's suing because she was a member in 2009, and that the way that the statute was at the time and that the documents were prepared, she was a member. Then she's suing for damages on the fact that distribution should have been given to her, not that distributions were somehow improperly done. The Medtronic litigation makes it clear that if the injured party is not the LLC, but the person suing, it's a direct action, not a derivative action. And so we're not saying we should have been made a member in 2009. We're saying we were a member in 2009. And I want to point out to a point that counsel made. They said if the corporation was formed in 1902, we wouldn't go back. Yes, we would. We'd go back to 1902 to see what the rights of the parties were then. And we have to, because our Supreme Court has said numerous times that you don't apply a statute, even if it's supposed to be applied retroactive, which this didn't say, this supplanted, not said, not retroactive, if in doing so would take away vested rights. So if my client was a member at the time the LLC was formed, she remains a member. And I just want to remind the court, the fact that a member isn't listed doesn't mean no one's a member. There has to be a member. So there has to be a member. So the law does apply at the time. So As to whether or not we made sufficient allegations, I mean, it sounds to me like we're trying to incorporate Twombly into Minnesota law, and the Twombly pleading requirements just don't apply here. The last point I want to make is the fact that 322C itself says that an organizer is not a member is telling, because the legislature is presumed to know what it's doing and is presumed to know it's changing the law. And so the legislature changed the law to make it clear an organizer is not a member, which therefore would indicate that the legislature understood that an organizer might be ipso facto or de jure a member automatically. Unless the court has questions, I will yield my last minutes.
Doesn't appear as if any of the panel members have any further questions. So thank you both for your oral argument and for your written submissions in this case. We will take the matter under advisement and issue our opinion within the statutory period.
Thank you, Your Honors.